Attention, FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your morning show prep begins now.
And 36 seconds after the hour of 9 in this, the month of April, in the year of our Lord, 2005. Thank you for coming by live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios at Maxine 10. It's the Rick Emerson Show, live on the banks of the feces-filled Willamette River in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Broadcasting to you live, unlike everything else on your radio dial at this particular time. Everything else having been taped hours ago by someone who is now long gone from the studio of origination. Where am I? Oh, here it is. A whole bunch of stuff to get to today, but let me give you the phone numbers. It's 503-535-9100. 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. Those are the emails today. Phone numbers, rather, if you'd like to. I'm sorry. I'm just distracted. I can't find my pen. There we go. All right. All is well with the world. I have my pen once again. If you'd like to call today, 503-535-9100 in Portland or outside Portland, 1-877-535-9100. You can email if you like, and with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your what have you. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com. So today, every day, we say to ourselves, well, this is it with the Michael Jackson news. Things can't possibly get any more horrifying. There's no way things can become more off-putting and disturbing, shaking everything I thought I knew about this society of ours, challenging everything that I thought was right and good. And every day I'm proven wrong.
That's right. No eyebrows are raised in today's testimony.
I mean, and that's the thing, too. What they're doing with this Michael Jackson testimony, it is the slowly boiling the frog technique. If you had just come out like a year ago,
you'd be boiling a lobster.
No, the story about the frog that if you just toss a frog in boiling water, he'll go ow ow and jump out. But if you put a frog in cool water and then slowly turn it up, he'll just stay there and let himself be boiled.
Oh, I see.
So it is the gradual increase of the temperature that he doesn't really notice. It is the gradual incline going up towards to the truly horrific levels that. Because if last year you just said Michael Jackson licks the heads of little boys, I mean, it's, you would just sort of recoil in horror and turn off the television. And you go outside and putter around the garden or something and decide to get some air. But because we sort of led people down this path with first he looked normal. Then his skin went all wacky and blotchy like Colby cheese. Then his nose got all pointy. Then he developed some sort of a strange cleft in his chin. Then he was just, riding horses with small children. Then it was hands full of Jesus juice. And now we've gotten to the point where yesterday he's in a jacuzzi. I mean, it sounds ludicrous even to say. He's in a jacuzzi with a bunch of small children. And the maid comes in and just sees a pile of wet, squishy little boy underwear in the corner of the room. That's no good. Right there, you know that you're headed down some sort of a road that you... like Martin Sheen in Apocalypse Now. No knowing where this river's going to take you. And improbably, it gets even more horrific today. So keep listening for that. What else? Oh, I've also got this. Now, this story right here. Where did I put it? This story right here. This is fantastically horrific because this story that I'm holding right here involves a living creature working its way into your body and being undiscovered for months and months and months. Now, I've got two different versions of the story, and I'm unclear about which one is more horrific. One is from the Associated Press, one is from Reuters. And I can't really decide which one is the more blood-curdling of the two. Same story, just two different writers. I will review them, and we'll decide on one. Scott Daly from filmfever.org is going to be here later on today. He'll have a review of an exciting brand new film called Sahara.
And
I saw that a couple of weeks ago.
So forth. We'll have more. Oh yeah, we'll have more sound from it too.
The robot did it.
Lots of Sahara news today. We've got that. We'll do a little. We've got a little pop culture film quiz. We'll do too. We'll have you face off against Scott Dowling in film knowledge. Your chance to win $25 in the gift certificate towards budget computers. We've got more details about Listener Party 8, which is coming up 7 days from now. 1 week. 1 week from today. Listener Party 8, which happens next Friday at the Viper Room, 8 p.m., followed by the first ever live broadcast of the Rick Emerson Show, which happens next Friday night, immediately following Listener Party 8. So that is happening next Friday. And we now have in our possession, they are back at my desk. We have the big prizes that we are giving away next Friday for Listener Party.
They're fantastic.
They are very cool for the Dead Celebrity Costume Contest and all that stuff. So we have all the details on that. We have a Jackson Watch, Geek Watch coming up today, Job Watch coming up today. Joel is going to be here from Corporate Accounts Payable with How Chicks Think. We'll count down the top five rock movies of all time. Don and Mike at noon, Like Us at 3. On and on till the break of dawn. We're here with the lovely, short timing Sarah X. Dillon, who joins us now on the Rick Emerson Show.
How you
feeling? Hello. How you feeling today?
Good.
Did you get home okay?
Mm-hmm.
No unpleasant incidents last night?
No.
No strange or unusual alcohol related?
I was very responsible. However, today was my last day on 94.7, so I'm going to go spend my afternoon at a strip club. So you might see me riding around.
For what reason?
With Greg and Brian.
Those guys spend a lot of time at strip clubs, don't they?
Not really.
I don't know. It seems like the last two times...
Well, let me tell you, every time we go there, I'm not going to say who, not what station, but there's a very distinguished gentleman who works in this building that you would not think would be there. Every time I go to this one particular place...
Oh, damn. See, now I have to start guessing. It's Mark Forbes.
Not going to say.
It's, very distinguished. I don't know any of the people in here till they leave, usually.
Don't worry, Tim. You'll get my goodbye next Friday.
Oh, yeah. No, next week we'll get to... We should write your memo on the air ourselves. Sarah Dillon's moving on to pursue other opportunities.
I already put it on my blog yesterday.
We wish her well in her future endeavors. Okay, I got to move on for this trip. No, I bet I think the one and only time I've ever spent social time with Greg from 94.7, wasn't it some strip club? Some skis place downtown? Oh, I won't say the name of the place. I don't want anybody to stalk you, but anybody to stalk you more.
Yeah, well, that's the same place we're going to go to.
And then he was talking about strip karaoke today.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on. Station's no longer relevant to us in any way. Tim Riley's in the Max 910 newsroom working on the following stories today.
Well, the Michael Jackson trial gets creepier every day. We'll have all the chilling details from yesterday, none of which are appropriate for children. And guys spend more money on video games than music, we're told. According to a new survey, and we'll continue to mourn the death of the Pope till we find somebody new to mourn.
Fantastic. All right, it's 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. So all of that is coming up today. Scott Dowling with movie reviews. Jackson Watch, Job Watch, Top 5, Jolie. We will announce the party prizes for Listener Party 8, which is coming up 1 week from tonight. So 7 days and, 11 hours. From tonight. So be listening. It all begins around the corner with Tim Riley in the Max 910 newsroom. We'll get all of that stuff underway. And we have a... well, never mind. We'll just do this. We're going to get behind. Let's go ahead and roll it. It's the Man Song from Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on Max 910. Don't go anywhere. We begin everything around the corner. Stay there.
Hey! Makes a man, is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man's man, man. Now you're a man, a man, 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 a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a man. Live it, live it. the man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just cause she has been...
How do you like the smell? Is it good?
Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the...
Give him hot milk. Cookies.
Your head off. Back after this is the Rick Emerson Show. We begin around the corner with Tim Riley in the Max 910 Newsroom. Stay there. Won't you please? All right, so Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's Friday. It's 503-535. Ah, damn it. Damn it all to hell. At a precariously balanced pile of things, which has now gone all higgledy-piggledy. 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. Jackson Watch coming up today. Geek Watch, Job Watch. Ladies and gentlemen, please clear the decks for Tim Riley.
It's not just news. It's news that hurts. With Tim Riley, only on Max 910.
Who else watched the Pope's funeral at 2:30 this morning?
Isn't the Pope's funeral been all week?
No, this is the final funeral.
No, this is like, this is the 18th hole?
Yeah.
From that particular course?
This is the epilogue.
No. Well, you can't see the actual funeral, can you? Because don't they stick him in a big marble slab underneath the basilica there?
Oh, no, they show that after in still picture. I'm talking about the singing and the medieval pageantry, the Gregorian chants.
Oh, the waving of the incense and the drinking of children's tears or
that
whatever.
That was on this morning around 3 o'clock.
No, I did not watch
poured myself a bowl of life cereal and sat back and enjoyed.
I'll get it when it comes out on DVD with the commentary.
Oh, that could be, too.
They really do. They ought to release some sort of a director's cut, like a Criterion collection of the Pope's funeral with Carrot Top doing the commentary on it.
That would be different. Well, the Catholic Church seizes the moment to rewrite its own history, as Monsignor Bob Hartman tried to do this morning on IMUS when discussing the church's sex scandals.
When that scandal became well known, the reaction of the church was quick and decisive. That the church did not stand for this, the church could not stand for this, and it was betraying his mandate to be a form of trust and holiness. And he stood up at that time.
Now, just a minute, says Ivis.
That's what we call, in journalistic circles, that's called a big load. That's what that is there.
Now, Ivis took them up on that.
Yeah, well, that is fair to...
I agree that our response took a while.
You just said it didn't.
30 years.
You just said it was immediate. So which was it?
Just said. Say to him, what, I refuse to answer these questions. May tend to incriminate people that I work for.
Child abuse is funny. Those wacky molesting priests.
Meanwhile, Pope biographer Carl Bernstein finds some reality.
The churches are empty. Only 4 blocks from the Vatican, you can barely find anybody in church on Sundays. Mm. And John Paul II's successor is going to have to address that.
American Catholics do love the church, meaning the buildings themselves, not necessarily the teachings. Take birth control, for example.
Quarters of American Catholics, according to almost every survey, do not practice contraception. And also the scandals in the church involving the abuse of young boys by priests has had a huge effect on American Catholics. And I think there are many American Catholics that feel very disaffected from the church and yet love this Pope. Also, his attitudes and those of the church theology as presently interpreted having to do with homosexuals, I think, is abhorrent to many Catholics and non-Catholics alike.
Yeah, it's the very definition of lip service. Yeah, no American Catholic under the age of 50 anyway, can actually give you anything that they agree with the Pope on, they agree with the Catholic Church's dogma and catechism on. It's not the case.
Even the seats aren't comfortable.
No, it's man, I mean... And
your knees hurt.
Man, you ain't kidding. And when I was at that, whatever, the Church of... God, was it St. Francis of Assisi in San Francisco over Christmas, man, and I... You know, that's pretty much, I think, that's it for me. I think I'm done going to Catholic Church after that. But I was sitting there, you know, it's like they've had some structural engineer come in and spend months and months in front of a drawing board trying to figure out how to make those pews and those kneelers as uncomfortable as possible. I mean, it's not even real. And I know that it's there to keep you from dozing off during the long, interminable sermons that are given, but boy howdy, it's just no fun at all.
Bill Clinton remembers meeting the Pope at the Vatican.
I was with the Pope and in the Vatican. I had the feeling that, you know, 2,000 years of history had cascaded down and crystallized in this moment, in this man, in this place. I was overwhelmed by it. I thought it was one of the more memorable experiences of my life.
Yeah, Pope John Paul II is very much like Dan Rather, a man whose time had come and passed and gone. And you know, I don't care who, unless they pick that black guy they keep talking about, which is not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Unless they pick somebody who's just some earth-shatteringly unlikely selection for Pope, this is the last Pope that anybody's really going to care about. Because by the time the next Pope dies, the Catholic Church will have fallen even further out of favor with the vast majority of people in this world, especially Americans, and he will cease to be relevant to anyone.
Time for the Jackson Watch. Where do we start?
Just get stranger and stranger and stranger every day.
A former security guard at Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch told a lurid story about seeing the singer kiss, fondle, and perform oral sex on a boy who later received a financial settlement from the pop star. But to MSNBC's Jennifer London said the guard has another admission.
Did admit, however, under cross-examination, that he did sell his story to a tabloid magazine to help fund a lawsuit against Michael Jackson, which he eventually lost. Also, the jury heard from former housekeeper Adrienne McManus. She also said she saw Jackson acting inappropriately with other children, including actor Macaulay Culkin. When cross-examination of Adrienne McManus continues this morning, we expect the defense to continue to attack her credibility, in part by focusing on the fact that she, too, sold her story to a tabloid magazine to help fund the lawsuit that she was also a part of.
Well, the question that nobody's been able to answer is whether or not Macaulay Culkin is going to be called by the defense to testify, which is going to be the greatest day in the history of jurisprudence. It will be the most fantastic day in the history of all news-gathering organizations. Other stories, JFK, the Hindenburg, the surrender of the Japanese, these will all pale before Macaulay Culkin and his luscious, succulent, all-day sucker-like bee-stung lips, having to sit on the stand and talk about whether Michael Jackson licked any part of his face. It's
Macaulay Culkin.
Thank you. I might not even come to work that day. I might just stay at home with a Hickory Farm sausage and the knife and some booze and just sit in front of the television and watch that all day long. It's going to be the best day ever.
The following part of the story is rated PG-13.
Now, what are we about to...
What happened at the jacuzzi?
Can I see this for a second?
Yeah, would you like this?
The same thing on MSNBC.
Mm-hmm. We're thinking about this for a second here.
Well, this is just disturbing.
Yeah.
Is all this. Yeah, okay. Well, so this isn't actually, there's nothing really objectionable in this so much as it is just oogie. Mm. So the oogie factor here is like, I would say, an 8 out of 10.
So don't say we didn't warn you. So here we go. The security guard at Ramp Chacon said he saw Jackson engage in activities which he described as, quote, passionate, unquote.
See, right there. There's the oogometer. He's. Because it's one thing if, you know, clearly it's inappropriate in all circumstances and scenarios, but it's one thing if the kid is asleep like Linda Hamilton style, and Jackson is coming in like that security guard in T2 and just, you know, just licking the side of his face. It's quite another thing if you get this image of Jackson and a 9-year-old boy toasting each other with champagne glasses in front of a roaring fire. You know, Slankton.
At least they weren't running down the beach in the sunset and having a moment like this playing in the background.
Well, a theme from A Summer Place is on the soundtrack, hand in hand, running in slow motion through some billowing orange curtains on the surf.
Well, Chacon said he described a passionate embrace. Said the singer and the boy took a dip in the outdoor jacuzzi, then showered. He said he saw Jackson kiss the boy's head and shoulders and later moved his hands, quote, down to his private area, unquote. He also said there was another incident in which Jackson took the boy away in a golf cart and kissed him in front of a Peter Pan display.
See, That's an image that's going to stay with you for the rest of your life. Michael Jackson, let me whisk you in my golf cart to this place 35 feet away where I can kiss you passionately in front of a Peter Pan display. I mean, really, there's just so much going on in that sentence that's just unholy and wrong that it really is difficult to isolate any specific facet of this story, which makes my skin crawl. The whole thing is just one gigantic gumbo of inappropriateness.
So we're just beginning here.
Oh, great.
Now let's talk about the maid whose name is Adrienne McManus. Now, she was a Jackson maid between 1990 and 1994. She also testified that she saw the pop star kiss Macaulay Culkin on the cheek while his head was on... Wait a minute. On the cheek while his hand was on Culkin's bottom?
Hold on. So his hand is on Culkin's bottom.
Right, while he's kissing him.
He's kissing Macaulay Culkin on the cheek. Well, how horrible is it that this story has gotten so bizarre?
It is Michael Jackson.
That does it. I mean, all things, relatively speaking, comparatively speaking, it's just not all that horrifying to me.
McManus described a similar scene with two other boys in a third incident involving the same boy that Chacon testified about. In the later incident, she said Jackson and the boy were changing their shirts when Jackson kissed the boy on his cheek and mouth and put his hand on his groin area.
All right. Let's be done with that.
I think we're done with this.
Let's be done with that. There's your Jackson watch. Here's Tim Riley in the Max 910 newsroom.
Meanwhile, let's see if Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowes can outdo the Catholic Church with pageantry for their wedding tomorrow. Colleen Harris, Prince Charles' former secretary, talks up the big day.
Well, I would imagine that Camilla is feeling quite nervous at the moment. Like all brides, the day before the wedding, you start to panic. Things don't go according to plan all the time. So I should think she's worrying about all sorts of things at the moment. The prince has been away at the Pope's funeral today, so he's been otherwise engaged.
I kind of fit her gigantic teeth inside the door of the church. That's not a glamorous looking woman right there. I'm sure they seem to be very much in love, and I'm sure that, as Drew Curtis would say, I'm sure that Prince Charles and his noble steed will have a long, happy life from now on. But that's a strange John Elway looking face that woman's got right there. And I'm getting a very strong no one cares about this vibe off not only the American public, but everybody else, especially for people of my generation and above, because I think Sarah's way too young to remember this. Because when was the Prince, the Charles and Di thing?
In the 80s.
Like 83?
Yeah.
84?
Yeah, this is like a week of the 80s.
Yeah, the big thing I remember about Diana is just her dying.
Just getting right into the wall. But I was in, I don't know, probably fifth or sixth grade, man, and it was Time Magazine and coffee table books and... the special, collector's editions, you know, of, like, Life and everything that came out. I mean, it was on every television, and you couldn't get away from it. And, like, every girl I went to school with was just all gaga and gushy about it forever and ever and ever. And this is sort of, just no one cares about this. This is just a big jacket, because I don't even think she can be queen, can't she?
I don't know. I've heard differing opinions on
because
that.
Because if he becomes king, is there a king?
No, there's no king.
Why isn't there a king?
Because the king died.
Yeah, the king? Just the queen right now.
I thought the queen was dead, too. Who's the queen?
Queen Elizabeth.
Okay, not like the boat.
That's Charles' mother. Well, it was named after his grandmother.
How old is she?
The boat was named after her, Rick. She wasn't named after a boat.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. I don't care about the royals.
No, well, there was a king, but he died.
Right,
so
he
now,
died in 1950-something.
But since she's still alive...
1950-something? How goddamn old is she?
Well, the queen was like a teenager when she became queen.
Wait, I thought she did die.
Fair play
to
the king.
No.
It was the other... Yeah, it was the old queen, right?
Yeah, it was the old queen.
The older
queen mother died.
Queen.
Right.
Boy, we've really just gotten ourselves to some...
No, so as soon as this queen dies, then he becomes king.
Correct.
Oh, I see. So it's like they both got to be dead before you can...
Yeah.
Oh, I see. All right. Okay.
That's the way it works.
So the slot doesn't free up until they both cacked it.
Right.
But so then he will be king, and then Camilla will be whatever, Mrs. King.
Yes.
Are these people actually calling to talk about the royals?
Is that?
I don't know. Well, let's play another soundbite, won't we? The couple will admit their past sins.
I think this is part of the ceremony and something that will have been agreed between the Prince and Camilla and the Archbishop of Canterbury. I think it is actually more of a sort of private moment for them. But, you know, they're sharing all of this with us. So isn't that wonderful?
It is wonderful.
Yeah, I hate the British. All right. Is that it?
That's it for them.
All right, let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Hey, Carl. There is a prince married to the queen.
Okay, so there's a prince married to the queen.
There is a prince married to the queen. He is still current.
You can't be a prince married to the queen. Isn't that like, getting on with your brother or your son or your nephew?
No, her husband is a prince. I cannot come up with his name, but Queen Elizabeth's husband is a prince.
All right. Is he the prince of something in Britain?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Excellent. There you go.
He's the Prince of Polo and horseback, right? And fox hunting.
Prince of sitting around like a wanker at a boarding school. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Let's go to Florida, shall we?
Let's do that.
After a 5-year-old girl got sick in the bathroom of her kindergarten class, the teacher made her don rubber gloves and manually remove a clog from the toilet, according to a lawsuit. Lori Januska sued Bonita Springs Charter School this week after she and her 5-year-old daughter, Heather, clogged the toilet and her teacher made her remove it as the entire class watched. The suit said a 5-year-old was subjected to cruel, unusual, and traumatic disciplinary action, which directly resulted in severe emotional distress, pain, and suffering and mental distress. The girl suffers from an incurable gastronomical condition. The suit, which seeks an unspecified amount of damage, claims the school staff was negligent in hiring an unqualified teacher.
The story is horrible in every way. Mm-hmm. Did you ever realize this, too? Never mind. I don't want to talk about plungers. I'm just going to note this, though, that never do you curse yourself more than when somehow the toilet has become plugged or clogged. You don't want to, you know, there's some sort of a blockage
every
going
Monday
on there.
Morning here at 5.
It's seriously. And first of all, here, there are no plungers. There's no plunger, there's no coat hanger, there's nothing. There's nothing with which to and so you sometimes will go from bathroom to bathroom in this building looking for the toilet that works. And I don't know what it is where it's like some lining up of the planets thing where every toilet in this building has got a clog at the same time. It's never just one. It's like you'll do that thing and it's always the same thing. You walk into the bathroom, you walk over to the stall, and then you'll just hear the, and then you realize you can't use that. So you wander around down the hall. But, of course, by definition, every time there's one toilet that doesn't work, the workload on the other remaining toilets increases exponentially, thus geometrically increasing the likelihood that those toilets will stop working by the end of the day. And then you got to go use the bento hut down the road, and that's nobody's idea of fun. So... but never do you curse yourself more than when you've got to do some work on the clog in the toilet and you realize that you've got that, like, crusty-ass plunger from 1974 that just came with the house that you've never bothered to replace or upgrade in any way. And then here's what always happens when you're using the plunger, always. I do realize now I'm actually engaged in literal toilet humor on the air.
Just as long as you realize it.
But here's what... Well, I get accused of it all the time, so I might as well actually do some... Here's the funny thing about toilets. But here's what always happens with the plunger, and you know this is true. You will pick up the plunger, and the old kind where it's like the pinkish-reddish, like, you know, kind of mushroomy, you know, rubber at the bottom.
A traditional plunger.
Yeah, and so you will take the plunger, you will put the plunger into the toilet, and then what happens?
It doesn't work.
You push the little plunger stick down, and it just goes... and just turns inside out, and that's it. And there's no, like, plunging back and forth. Because the first time you press it, the stick just goes right through, and it's like the stuff just bent, the little rubber lip just bends backward, and then you're screwed. And then you go to the store, and you realize that there's nothing you can dump into your toilet. Here's the other thing I found out. The last time my toilet was clogged, because there's never enough toilet discussion at 9:35 in the morning. The other thing I discovered, last time, the toilet, and it was something dumb. It was like a bunch of, it was like some... some dog food or some crap that we, you know, where should we dispose of it? There's a trash can. No, let's dump it in the toilet. How could that go wrong? Flush it right down the toilet, clogs the thing up. And never do you feel more vulnerable than when the toilet in your house has stopped working at about 1 a.m. Because you realize when your toilet stops working in the middle of the night, you have nothing.
Why don't you use the other bathroom?
Because we only have one.
Oh, okay.
We only... Some of us don't live in palatial Tannisborne mansions. We only have the... Well, Sarah's only got the one bathroom. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If your bathroom goes belly up at 1 in the morning, that's the most vulnerable moment of your life.
Oh, no. I found out last night that I guess you can use the bathtub as a backup for that. Not me.
I don't understand.
It must have been somebody from the strip club.
I was told...
Were you...
No, I wasn't. I was told that men sometimes use a bathtub to pee in. Is that true?
I don't understand. What discussion would you have been having? What would you have been talking about in which this would have come up?
Well, it didn't so much come up as I accidentally walked into the bathroom.
No, I don't want to hear about this. Was this
So there are always options.
Was this
so
you or was this Kara?
It was Kara.
Of Kara and Tate fame.
Yeah. Kara, yeah.
What was Kara's...
No, Kara's toilet works fine. But Kara was informed by a drunken Tate that...
That men sometimes just use the bathtub.
That men use the bathtub to pee in.
Let's break now.
Okay.
Let's break now.
I do have another story on bodily functions. Can that we collect after the break, or should we do it before?
Why don't we put that in the B pile for today?
In the B pile.
We're going to put that in the...
All right.
Going to put that in the later.
We'll talk about something else.
In the now and later sucker that is the Rick Emerson Show, that's the later part.
We continue to mourn the Pope.
Okay. We'll be back after this. Stay there, won't you please? It's 503-535-9100. 1-877-535-9100. If you'd like to email, God knows why, it is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Geek Watch on the way. Job Watch, Scott Daly, Top 5, Jolie from Corporate Accounts Payable. More scintillating discussion about various things. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Don't go anywhere. It's not even local crap. Rick Emerson is live and local. Weekdays from 9 till noon, max 9:10. Talk radio for guys. All right, it's 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. The Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's Friday. Still to come, Job Watch, Geek Watch. We'll talk about the prizes. We have picked them up. We've solidified them. They are in our possession. Back in the prep area there for the Rick Emerson Show, we have the prizes in hand for listener party 8, which happens 1 week from today, next Friday, 8 p.m. at the Viper Room, featuring our Dead Celebrity Look-Alike Contest and a special live nighttime broadcast of the Rick Emerson Show. So we'll talk about that later on. Hey, Jacob Dylan just left the building.
I know, I saw him.
Our chance to interview that rock and roll genius has slipped through our fingers.
Mm.
I was talking to someone. Sources from 105.1 The Buzz. Apparently, it's actually in the interview agreement that they faxed to the station that you can't ask him anything about Bob Dylan. Because you know,
are you serious?
It's in.
You know that Dylan isn't. Oh, okay.
Come on.
I have disliked this guy for
Bring
so
it on.
Long.
Bring it on,
dude. He just makes these huge proclamations about not wanting to be associated with his father and how he does his own music and all that crap. But at the same time, Dylan isn't even Bob Dylan's real freaking last name.
I know.
Which means Jacob took on his father's fake last name to try and make a music career out of it, even though he makes a huge point in saying that he didn't. And his band sucks.
Okay. There you go. Aren't you going to miss these opportunities when you leave the world of radio next Friday?
I am.
You're going to miss being able to wander the same halls as Jacob Dylan. Man, that guy.
Oh, the glamour.
If you were to look up Bland in a dictionary, I mean, look.
He does have pretty eyes.
Whatever. He's related to Bob Dylan, and I'm not. So there you go. I mean, you know, it's like he probably didn't care what I say, but that guy, he sounds like a big, warm glass of Metamucil. You know what I mean? It's just the blandest, least interesting pseudo rock you could.
I can't even name a song of theirs.
No, and all I know is that. I don't even know the whole song. I only.
How does it go?
Here's what I know of the Wallflowers. And I'll tell you how I know it. Because sometimes when I'm flipping through the FM dial, what will I hear? all hear that.
We play the best hits of the 80s. I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa.
And the 90s. And then I hear that. Whatever that song is of theirs.
I don't know what the...
One Headlight or whatever the hell that song is.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's one called Sweet Magda Carolina, Magda something or other.
Yeah, that is a bland song.
Well, whatever. So, but the good news is you won't have to hear from the Wallflowers anymore. So, whatever pain they've inflicted on you is over.
Is that why he was here?
On a package tour with Hootie right now, so they're not.
Now they must be playing a Chinook Winds.
Trying to get comped at the noodle bar. He just left the building. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for the Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on it.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Men spend more money on video games than they do on music, according to Nielsen Entertainment Research, leading credence to a growing belief that video games are displacing other forms of media for the attention of young men. And video gaming in general is starting to attract an older audience, with nearly a quarter of all gamers over the age of 40? Imagine that. For men, Nielsen said, games now rank only behind DVDs as the purchase category ahead of CDs, digital MP3 files, and other ways of buying music. Nielsen also found that African Americans and Hispanics spend more money on games each month than Caucasians. Advertisers are quickly embracing video games as a better way to get to young men than more traditional mediums such as television. Many games now have ads inside them, such as billboards and race games, and Nielsen is working on a method to measure audiences' responses to in-game ads. Nielsen found 40% of U.S. households have some kind of system dedicated to gameplay, whether a gaming PC, a console, or a handheld device. Among gamers, 23% own all three types of these systems.
Well, I would tell you this, it's absolutely true for me, that I would say, if you were to break out to three things, video games and music and DVDs, DVDs are absolutely the largest purchase I make. Sarah and I were just yesterday, actually, Sarah and I were out, we were picking up the prizes for Listener Party 8, and it's
yes,
like
we were
making one pass to this. I couldn't get through one trip to the store without buying a DVD, because the Iron Giant...
I bought it for you.
Special edition, actually. I picked it up, and Sarah actually ended up paying for it as one of my belated gifts for something or other.
I have so many gifts that I owe you.
See, and the good news is I don't even remember that. So, I'll take your word for it that you owe me gifts for some sort of an event, but I don't even remember what they would have been for. So, I buy DVDs just by the fistful. It's like a sickness, an illness, a disease, followed by video games, followed by music. But I'll tell you what that's all about, though. It's just that... The more time you spend involved with DVD purchases or video games, the more likely it is that you're a serious geek. And the more likely it is that you're a serious geek, the more likely it is that you've developed alternate methods for obtaining a lot of your music. So this doesn't mean that you're not getting a lot of music. It just means that you're not buying a lot of music. You're certainly not buying CDs, brand new. I mean, because it's like you've developed, different ways. Like, there's a couple ways to do it. You can be getting it through iTunes. Some people download stuff. Or you figured out that there's better ways to do it than blowing $18 on something brand new, necessarily. Like, CD Game Exchange is a great example of that. I mean, as much as we talk about those guys, they have figured out exactly the method where they have consolidated DVDs, video games, and use CDs all in one place. And use CDs, of course, don't ever track on any of this purchasing. So it's like... The more that you start to get into that kind of stuff, the more savvy you become about where you're going to buy it and how you're going to buy it and what you're going to spend on it. So, no, that's absolutely true.
Nielsen also examined the amount of time spent playing alone versus socially and found 79% of men and 79% of women over the age of 45 spend most of their time playing alone. Teenage women tended to play more socially, Nielsen said. Well, women 25 to 54 are roughly split between playing alone and playing with others.
That's a completely misleading figure, though, because they don't take into account the Kyle, Rick Emerson, Don Geronimo method of playing online with others.
With the booby doctor.
Yes, exactly. With a gothic shadow. With gothic shadow hacksaws.
How you doing?
The booby doctor is in.
Thank you.
I wonder if he knows he's famous.
No, we really should have called this listener party at the Booby Doctor is in.
We shouldn't have.
It's fantastic. I love that guy, man. And it's like I have thought so often about adding him to my Xbox friends list just because he's hilarious to me. And it's like, I don't know if I'm proud, but it is, you know, it is a fact that on my Xbox friends list, my friends list is empty. Because I'm not complaining about it. Because I, as you know, people have been saying, what is your gamer tag? I want to add you and my friends and I play Halo 2. And I've resisted giving out my gamer tag because then it's going to be guys calling me out trying to put the smack down on me. And then I'm going to be even more embarrassed about my Xbox deficiencies than I already am. And plus, most of the guys that I have played with, it's like, you care about that guy. You stick him on your friends list, you probably never talk to him again anyway. So what's the point? But the Booby Doctor, man, I have thought long and hard several times about sticking that guy on my friends list because I know there's fantastic audio to be gleaned from games featuring the Booby Doctor.
So, oh, yeah, that's gold.
Yeah, just play one more time.
How you doing?
The Booby Doctor is in.
I want you to befriend like a little 12-year-old. He's like, how you doing?
How you doing is it's a guy.
And how do we know that's not like Michael Jackson's?
Could somebody's playing at Neverland? That's some guy named Gothic Shadowfall or something like that. But it's like a bunch of numbers and letters all mixed in together with the zany leet speak that the kids are all into. But man, the great thing about the Booby Doctor guy is that you can hear that headgear that he wears. Man, you can hear that gigantic ass retainer in his mouth. It's all things good and wonderful. Anyway, there's your Geek Watch.
By Grandthor's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Booby Doctor is in.
There you go. Thank you.
Well, let's see what's on the TV tonight. For those of you who don't play these video games, Biography is on as Tracy Lords hopes to forget her porn past.
Not going to happen.
I remember from Crybaby.
Do you? And Crybaby and Serial Mom as well. She's also in Serial Mom.
Yeah.
She's at the swap meet, and she's the one who goes into the bathroom and gets killed by Kathleen Turner with the it's like a fireplace poker or some crap. Tracy Lords, she's one of those people. You know what it is? Tracy Lords has that Jacob Dylan syndrome. No questions about my porn career. No questions about the fact that I forged all my ID and made a bunch of porn films when I was 16. Even though that's the only reason anybody knows who I am, the only reason anybody cares who I am, the only reason I have any degree of fame or celebrity at all. Aside from the fact that she makes terrible, terrible, terrible techno albums that sell to no one, not even the Europeans, and they'll buy anything.
Yeah, let's see. It is immediately followed by a biography of Lisa Marie Presley, and who would care?
Seriously, what is it? Let's do the top five least talented hack-like celebrity relations.
Who has a bad attitude?
Lisa Marie Presley can shut the hell up. If you were Lisa Marie Presley, why would you do anything but just sit on your ass and eat Pringles all day? Why would you even bother trying to have a music career that's clearly destined for failure? See also Jacob Dylan. Jason Bonham. Doesn't the Mick Jagger have some useless brother that puts out records? Isn't Chris Jagger or somebody? Yeah, Mick Jagger has the good for nothing younger brother that I think he's trying to put out recordings. See also Linda McCartney. See also Yoko Ono.
Yeah, what else is on tonight? Doc Hollywood, starring Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, and what's her name? Julie Martin.
Yeah. Julie Warner.
Julie Warner. Yeah, she is beautiful in that film.
Trophy Wife's Secret. A homicide detective suspects that a woman and her attorney lover killed her husband.
Excellent.
A sports tycoon. The American President is on, starring Michael Douglas.
It's a fantastic film, especially for fans of the first five seasons of The West Wing, before it became ass. You should watch that because it's got fantastic casting. Michael Douglas, Annette Bening, Martin Sheen, good stuff.
Let's talk about in Fever Pitch, Drew Barrymore plays a successful businesswoman who falls in love with a diehard Red Sox fan named Jimmy Fallon. During the course of their relationship, she realizes just how much the Sox rule his life, which makes her wonder if they really have a future together. Drew Barrymore said the movie is more about their relationship than baseball.
At first, I was like, no, it's not a baseball movie at all.
Boy.
It's a love story. And it is, first and foremost, a love story. I
Boy's
think
like
if you take the baseball component out of it and ask that question, how much do you have to change in order to be successful in a relationship, or how much do you get to remain yourself? Ben, Jimmy's character's obsession is baseball. It is the Red Sox. But I think any couple can relate to what it takes to keep a relationship functional.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever you say. They're trying to get a little bit of that Jerry Maguire money. With this movie, ever since Jerry Maguire, which I have said for the longest time, is it cold in here?
No, it's fine.
I can't figure out whether it's cold or not in here. I think I've got consumption. Jerry Maguire is the perfect date film. Jerry Maguire is the greatest date film ever made. The only runners up to that are other Cameron Crowe films. But Jerry Maguire is a fantastic film because it is half guy film, half chick film, right? It's got the star-crossed lovers and the you have me at hello and whatever. And then it's also got the sports thing and the show me the money and the so forth. It is exactly 50% dude film, 50% girl film. And everybody has been trying to replicate that since Jerry Maguire, which is not one of my favorite movies, but which is stunningly effective at being a film that couples can watch together. That's not like this movie, however, which will obviously be terrible.
Drew, talk about choosing to make the movie this year.
It's weird, too, because this film has been written for quite a few years now and hasn't been made. And had a very small window of opportunity to get made this year. And we all felt like, you know, we could actually wait until next year to make it. But no, these games are going, and let's just go, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. And then the miracle, the absolute phenomenon occurred during filmmaking. It's just, like, not real. It doesn't usually happen that way, ever.
Well, the miracle is she finally stopped talking.
Okay. She's always, what's her name, Charlie McGee to me, though. It's setting things on fire. That's who she'll be to me eternally.
Do you want to do these, haircuts now or save them for later?
Why don't we do the job watch, and then we'll do the Sahara cuts.
All right. All right. Top of the job watch.
Here's your job watch.
Minimum wage.
Good-looking people are usually paid handsomely too. According to the nation's central bank, researchers for the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis suggest that society's hotties tend to make more money and get promoted more often than people who just have average looks. Analysts at the Fed pored over previous studies and research, looking for a possible link between appearance and wages.
Spend money trying to prove something like this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The study published in the Fed's quarterly magazine concludes that if you want a fatter paycheck, it helps to be tall, slim, and attractive.
Really? I could never figure that out myself. Well, not like, well, hell, it's not like anybody's coming offering me a TV job. It's not like Coin called me. Let's see, let's go through the Entercom directory. Rick Emerson, no. Clyde Lewis, no. It's like ticking off everybody in the building until they find... let's see. Matt Peterson, no. Sarah Dillon, call her. You know, so.
Tim Riley's very beautiful, though.
Well, I
no,
know.
I'm
well,
not.
Tim's got... Well, but Tim is... That's what Tim's been on television. Tim's been on... You've been on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
I've been a dead man on ER.
You played it, and you were in... wait, ER... Wait, hold on. I used to know this. ER... Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, The Invaders.
Yep.
You played a woman in The Invaders. You played an alien in The Invaders. You played a corpse.
On ER.
Wait, hold on. I have the other one. It was a movie, right?
Uh-huh. I drove a car.
Was it Con Air?
Nope.
What was it?
Nope. It was an Eddie Murphy movie.
Oh, Metro.
Nope.
Ah. Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Nope.
Coming to America?
No.
What?
It was a...
Boomerang.
No. No, I can't remember.
Distinguished Gentleman.
Nope, I can't remember it.
Dr. Doolittle.
This is gripping radio, I'm sure.
Yes.
Shouting out... You were in Dr. Doolittle?
Well,
I was kidding.
I was driving a car quickly.
Oh, you were a man driving car
oh,
quickly.
Oh, I'm so renting that now.
See, that's what I'm saying.
If you look at the Mercedes racing down the street, that is me.
See, so this is... I'm telling you, man, we ought to put together a clip reel of Tim Riley's appearances on television... Now, do you have, you don't have
oh,
like
I've
a,
been on the WB32.
Have you?
Yeah.
In what capacity?
That time we were doing the, we were raising money for kids.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
During the Richard days?
Yeah. Yeah, do we have the, yes.
This yeah, is, I have a clip.
I want to say congratulations.
That wasn't seen
Happy
in these
birthday to Miriam and Sam Foss of Concord. Latest winners of dinner at the Greenhouse. Compliments and joy.
It was when they heard these golden tones that the phone started to ring.
105.5. It's Dusty Springfield. The look of love.
Oh,
Porter. Want to know what love is? Barry Manilow with Chips. Teddy Pendergrass. Whitney Houston. With Hold Me.
That never gets old.
Best thing I've ever heard.
Do you want me to get a little bit closer to this microphone? Now, ladies, put down that soup spoon and let's do a slow dance.
Tim, I still have all of your stuff in here.
Oh,
you
no.
You haven't covered it.
Please don't play them to anyone else.
Coming up next hour, Anne Murray. So,
I sound like I have laryngitis, but I talk like this all the time.
I've got emphysema. I can barely take in a lungful of air.
I am a stroke.
I have difficulty enunciating my words. I'm metastasizing.
In a world where people are stuck being disc jockeys for the rest of their lives.
So, yeah, but so the TV people, so Tim has been on television. Tim's a good-looking man. He's been in the movies. Of course, they call Sarah. We'll be moving on after next Friday. Next Friday, the 15th, actually, same day as the listener party.
Yep.
The listener party will actually be your last opportunity to buy Sarah a drink in her capacity as this executive producer of this program. So, yeah, so Sarah's leaving us to go to Coin 6, so I will be here. Myself and Kyle and all the rest of the ugly people will just be remaining here, unloved, unused by anyone, overlooked. Are we done with the Job Watch?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, by the way, you're listening to KOTK Vancouver, Portland, KSLM, Salem, and Intercom Station.
Minimum wage! Yeah!
Rick, thanks to you guys, I watched Gilbert Grape last night. I love that movie.
Yep,
I've forgotten how much I enjoyed it till you mentioned it on Thursday's program. I thank you so much. Now, pleased to be answering a question for me. Gilbert Grape is the best acting DiCaprio has ever done. How can he have been that good early in his career and suck so badly now? He's such a Tom Cruise. Horrible actor that lands great roles because people go gaga over his looks. Yuck. F-Matt with Mama Grape.
This F-Matt is brought to you by Barfly Magazine.
See, I don't have the problem with Leonardo DiCaprio that everybody else does. He picks some terrible films sometimes. Like he does that Man in the Iron Mask. I never saw The Beach. I heard The Beach was terrible.
Oh, I liked The Beach.
But this last one,
yeah.
this biopic, I was like the youngest person in the theater. I was surrounded by senior citizens snoring.
The Howard Hughes thing?
They fell asleep during the 20 and never woke up till like, the movie was like halfway through.
Fell asleep during that endless pitch for the Seinfeld DVD set.
And, you know, choking on popcorn.
Well, it's like, the character's just way too young to play Howard Hughes.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
It's like, but it's the same thing when I went to see, it's sort of the same thing in reverse, as Boy George would say, when I went to see the... that Bobby Darin thing, Beyond the Sea, which is like, man, it's like, if you ever wanted to see someone's ego just taken and blown up and put on the screen in Panavision, I mean, I love Kevin Spacey and all, but damn, man, that is like the definition of a vanity project. And he's like 150 in that film. He's just like so old, because Bobby Darin died at like 35 or something.
Yeah, heart attack.
Yeah, so I mean, God love him for struggling to get it made. And I went to see it because it's his pet project. It's his labor of love. And I'm a sucker for that. I'm a sucker for projects that actors take under their wings and struggle to get made. But it's like he struggled so long to make it that there's just no way he was conceivably believable as Bobby Darin. But, man, everybody in the audience was like 75 years old. So, you know, a bunch of people who had the original Mac the Knife 45 or whatever. And it was just so difficult to accept him in that role because it was like... And, I mean, they can do some wondrous things with gray lenses and filters and CGI, but, man, you could not hide the amount of makeup. That it was like he had Tammy Faye-style makeup on. He was putting that stuff on with a shotgun. It's 10:08. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Tim Riley.
Oh, I still haven't watched Project Greenlight. It's in my
my
list of...
That was Tuesday, wasn't it?
No, they moved it to Wednesday, I believe, at 10.
So it was on night before last.
Yeah, I still haven't watched it yet.
I've been so behind with all
I did watch
of
The
stuff.
Office this week, which wasn't bad.
I didn't. I didn't even bother to tape it. It'll be on CNBC tonight, I think, if I want to watch it as a reader.
Oh, you already lost interest.
Yeah, I did. I got to tell you.
I wonder if most Americans already have.
That first episode was okay. The Diversity Day episode it was just too kooky. It was too sitcom-y for me.
Now, in this latest one... They did use the jerky camera motions for the first time.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder.
Was this latest one the one with the surprise?
Yep, with the ice cream sandwich. Oh, never mind.
So
I don't want to spoil the surprise.
Thanks.
No, I didn't find it very funny.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
It's better than most network TV, but you don't get the belly laugh you do with the British version.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like why? It's like when
an amusing time killer.
When they're making up the diseases, that was funny.
Yeah. That was kind of funny.
I mean, it'd be like divorcing your wife to date a less attractive version of her. It's like, what would be the point? You know, just go rent the... Hell, you can buy at CD Game Exchange, five locations, one near you. You can probably buy the entire series run of The British Office, including the Christmas special and the reunion show and the documentary, for like $40, if that. So, you know, just go get that. Just don't waste your time with this business. The network, Project Greenlight, though, is I haven't watched anything for this week. I haven't watched The Apprentice. I haven't watched The Shield. I haven't watched Project Greenlight. I haven't watched Arrested Development for like 3 weeks. That's the good and bad news about the TiVo. The good and bad news about the TiVo is, like a camel storing up water for the desert, you can just store up television. But sometimes you will take it as read that you will be able to watch it later, and so it just you really have to get fired sometimes to really appreciate the TiVo. Let me just tell you, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was getting that TiVo, because the last time I got blown out, the last time they fired me from the national show a couple years ago, man, that TiVo came in handy. It was like busting out emergency rations of entertainment. I just lost myself in like endless A-Team marathons and Knight Rider reruns. It was fantastic. But the thing with the TiVo is, you start to take it for granted that you're like, I'll watch it later. And by the time you finally get around to sitting down to watch TV, it's like you've got 500 hours of things to watch. And I know that this is the most American of complaints, and the people who are living in Iraq eating small stones for breakfast have no sympathy for me here. But the one thing about a TiVo or any TiVo-esque product, and Sarah can back me up on this, is that there does come a point where watching television starts to feel like work. Because you go home and it's like your TiVo, while you've been gone, I've taped 7 new hours of programming.
When am I supposed to watch all this?
I know, and you're just like, where do I begin? And you feel bad, especially if you have the actual brand name TiVo, because people anthropomorphize the TiVo. They put a personality on it. I know I do. I mean, you start to think of the TiVo as a living, breathing little pal, right? You start to think of the TiVo as this, like, faithful dog that is fetching television programs for it. You're like, well, the TiVo went to all this work to tape things for me. But I haven't watched it. Oh, I'm such a bad TiVo owner. And it does start to feel like you've got work piling up. It's like an overflowing inbox.
I agree with the work thing, because I record Dawson's Creek every day, and there are two of those a day. And if I don't come home for a couple afternoons, then they're all piled up, and there's like 16 of them, and I want to watch them in sequential order, you know. And
I was trying to watch the X-Files all the way through from the very beginning, mm-hmm. and it's like I was out of town for like 3 days, and I came back, and there was like 9 episodes, and it was like I had to erase them all. It's like when your inbox, your email inbox reaches epidemic proportions, and you just delete all the emails and pretend they were never there. It's just the only way to deal with it. These are quintessentially North American problems we're discussing right here.
I mean, there's lots of good action. Like, they have a brand new Errol Flynn documentary on TCM. Who they're trying to make Matthew McConaughey like in this stupid new movie.
Now, they're doing a marathon of Errol Flynn.
Betty Davis, as a matter of fact.
Are they calling it? Errol something 30 does something of Errol Flynn. But it's 30 right. Errol Flynn films in a row.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's talk about the Sahara here in a second. Do we have the Sahara cuts?
We do. They're right here.
All right, well, let's do those.
This is a wonderful motion picture. Rick Eisner makes his motion picture debut with the epic Sahara. The film stars Matthew McConaughey as an adventurer who, while searching for treasure in the desert, finds the scientist Penelope Cruz investigating a mysterious illness. Rick, discuss some of the challenges you faced while filming Sahara on location.
We pack up, go to Africa, and you're in the middle of nowhere, which on its own is pretty complex when you're shooting a movie like this. Then you add into the phalanx of tanks, you know, exploding boats, helicopters.
Is this Matthew McConaughey?
Planes,
this is Rick Eisner.
5,000 extras. And that is a massive thing to deal with. And then the clouds opened up and a rainstorm hit. And you know, you think we're in the desert, you don't get rainstorms, but we had a massive rainstorms caused flooding. They ended, and then we had a week of sandstorms. And I'd been warned about the sandstorms, but didn't think that they were real, but they are. It's like the movies. I mean, they're epic in scale. So those lasted for a week, and after that, we actually had locusts.
Okay, the word locust is pretty funny. He didn't have that. I thought it was Matthew McConaughey for a minute, but he didn't have that aw shucks, Sally Mae, do you want to go to a barn raising inflection that Matthew McConaughey always seems to have. You know, here the thing is, you no longer have to go on location. The filming of this stuff, I mean, as Sin City shows, you know, you don't even need real locations anymore. Because I think Sin City was filmed pretty much entirely in front of a green screen.
Uh-huh.
I think almost everything in that film was fake. So
down on the Mac. Brick says he's ready to direct his first...
Brick?
Brick?
Oh, B-R-E-C-K, Breck.
Breck.
Says he's ready to direct his first feature film.
To be honest, I spent the last seven or eight years getting ready for this day. I was a commercial director. I did national and international spots for the last 7 years. Then I got into television. I did a bunch of pilots, and I did the Taken, the Spielberg thing. And, you know, it's time behind the camera is what's important. And I was pretty much nonstop behind the camera for those 8 years, and that got me ready. But you can never be ready for, you know, truly a movie like this until you get out into Africa and get into the deserts of Morocco and start doing it.
Oh, good God.
Don't miss it.
Yes, yeah, whatever you do. Oh, before we do anything else, I got to read this story. Now, we had two versions of this story. I was trying to figure out which one was the most horrific, the AP or the Reuters. I've settled on the Reuters one.
Let's hear it.
Dateline Hong Kong. A Hong Kong hiker washed her face in a freshwater stream and then walked away, not noticing that a leech had wormed its way up one of her nostrils, according to the Hong Kong Medical Journal. Unaware she was playing host to the creature, the 55-year-old woman only consulted a doctor when her nose started gushing blood 4 weeks later. Oh, it gets better. The first doctor the woman saw could not find anything wrong. And it was only when she visited a second doctor that he saw the 5-centimeter leech poking out of her left nostril. That's got to be different. Like one of those stories you always hear from the 60s that I always think are urban legends about the tapeworm. According to the article, doctors only managed to remove the stubborn bloodsucker with forceps after applying anesthesia to the woman's nose. And then here's the best sentence of the article. Quote, direct removal of a live leech, especially from inside someone's nose, even when the leech is 5 centimeters long, might be difficult because of its powerful attachment to the mucosa and its slimy and mobile body.
There you go. I can just see that captured in infrared film.
Well, here's your problem right here.
This is
okay. Let's do one more here, and then we'll take a break.
Well, some folks may think the low-carb fad is going too far. The next big thing is alcohol without liquid, or EWOL for short. A shot of liquor is mixed with oxygen and inhaled. Lawmakers from Arizona and Maine don't like the idea, and Florida is among 16 states considering AWOL bans. The maker of AWOL machines describes them as the ultimate party toy. Drinkers boast about hangover-free drinking and the diet benefit of alcohol without mixers.
Oh, is this that thing that sprays it right up your nose?
Yeah, like a leech.
Yeah, just makes it into a gas and just jacks it right up your nostrils.
Yeah. Find it with the forceps. Critics said there's no scientific evidence to support the claims and worry about supercharged drinking.
Fantastic. We got an email from our good friend, The Low. He says, Rick, I don't know if Sarah's gotten any of the emails I've sent her because she never responds to them.
I have not received one email from him.
He says, however, I, for one, will be very sad to see her go. I wish her the best of all possible worlds in her next adventure. He could take over memo writing right here. however, I will die a very happy and satisfied man if you guys can make that logo of your pinning singles on Sarah with her thunder thighs a reality and then send me the photos. Peace.
Low.
All right. That's gross.
Yeah, I'm just reading the emails. Don't look at me. All right, well, let's take a break here. When we come back, here's what's up. We'll talk about Listener Party 8, which is 1 week from today. We have prizes in hand. And we will tell you after the break what those are. The party comes up next Friday, 8 p.m. I'll talk about some celebrity birthdays. What else? Jolie's going to be here. We'll do the top five for today. Top five rock and roll movies of all time. Scott Daly's going to be here from filmfever.org, et cetera, so on and so forth. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland.